It was actually 4,000 people. John, you get a chance to redeem yourself. You sure you don't want to say something? We might be here all night. So, my name is Jared. I'm very grateful, recovered alcoholic. Hey, how y'all doing? You guys look so pretty. You guys are just fresh and glowing. That was some good barbecue, right? Everyone's shaking their head. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. If I have a food coma in about 20 minutes, we know who's to blame. I'm so honored to be here. Thank you so much, Marsh and Jonathan and the whole Benchmark family. This is kind of surreal for me to be in this room, in this place. I had some spiritual heroes that came through this area, and they're still a part of my life. They might not be here today living in the physical realm, but they're still here, and they're with a lot of us inside. You guys know what I'm talking about, so that's cool. My sobriety, it's October 19th, 2003. As you can tell, I got sober young. I still got the baby face going on. I got sober 3 months before my 21st birthday. And it was bad already at that time. Now I'm going to get into a little bit. I live up in New York City, right outside New York, but my home group's in New York City. If you guys are ever in that area, come check us out. We run a group called Big Book Magic, and because we do see some miracles at that group, and we'd love to have you. My sponsor's name is Chris S. He's been here a couple times. He lives down in New Jersey, and he's been a huge part of my recovery. But I know what you guys are thinking, right? Because if you're like me, right, you're like, what's going on here, right? What are we doing, right? It's a Saturday, right? We should be out, right? And when I came into this deal, I was like, this feels weird, right? Like, this like feels like a cult almost, right? Like, what's going on here, you know? But, you know, I could disprove, you know, that, you know, Alcoholics Anonymous is not a cult really fast, right? Because what does a cult say? A cult says, turn over all your worldly possessions, right? Leave your family and come join us, right? That's what a cult says, right? They say, leave all your worldly possessions, leave your family, and come join us, right? Alcoholics Anonymous says, we know you don't got a goddamn thing. And your family probably don't want to talk to you either. Hopefully, you know, you could get some of this stuff back, you know? I mean, that's my experience, you know? John? Yeah, all right. I like to have a good time, you know? And, you know, that's what this is about. It's about being enthusiastic with life. It's about going out and doing things that I would have never normally done. But that just doesn't happen, though. Right? I had to put in some work into that. And I had to do a couple of things which might have felt a little uncomfortable at first, you know? And like coming to treatment, you know? And, you know, talking to some people about really who I am. And that didn't feel so great at first. I was like, I don't want to talk to you. I don't know you. And I know there's some family members in here tonight. And thank you, right? Thank you. So much, you know. I might not know you, but I know exactly what you're going through. Because I remember the look in my parents' eyes after the fifth treatment center and them saying, no one can help you anymore. We can't help you. We can't do this. Right? And I remember that moment that I had with them, with my dad and me and him, we just kind of looked in each other's eyes and we just knew. I just knew. I was going to die. And so I made myself a promise. And I said, I'm going to really try this out. And I'm really going to do the best that I can. So whether you're a resident here tonight or you're a family member, just know that it will get better. That is a promise. But there are absolutely some conditions. And those conditions are up on this wall. And we can do this stuff. And life is real good these days, you know? But it just takes a second. Just a split second. And I could be off, you know, somewhere else, you know? So we're going to have some fun tonight. We're going to talk a little about how I got to this deal. I'm going to talk a little bit about the recovery process because I believe that's what transformed myself and so many other people in this room. And then I'm going to talk about some recent experiences in sobriety and kind of how about some of these founders really helped guide me to some of these recent spiritual experiences that I've had. You know, I get to do this a bunch, and I'm pretty lucky. I'm pretty grateful for that. If you had asked me a few years ago where I see myself or, you know, what I'd be doing, I mean, this was not even on the radar. I mean, not even on the radar. And, you know, when I meet people like Marcia and Jonathan, we get to go to conferences. We see each other around the country. It's like a family reunion because we just know. You know, we know what they've been going through. They know what I've been going through. We chat, we visit, and it's just really cool. It's just really cool that we could do that. So, New York City alone is enough for a person to drink. You know, I was talking with Lane today. I'm like, are we doing it right up there? Are you guys doing it right? I think you guys are doing it right down here. I'd love to come down here. But I started drinking from pretty early on. No weird stuff in my family. My parents, they're both doctors. I came from a great home. Really went to some really good schools. I was pretty outgoing as a kid. And I played sports. I did that whole deal. I was really athletic. Most speakers I hear, yeah, I was like really shy. You know, I was like, I wasn't. You know, I was outgoing. I can talk to the girls. I can play on the basketball team. I never had, you know, any, you know, internal conflict early on. But I remember the first time that I drank booze. And I was about 13 years old. And me and my buddy, we were at his place, and he said, hey, I think we got some wine over here, you know, and you want to try some. And it was actually, raise your hand if you ever drink wine from a box. Anybody? Oh, wow. It's like the wave here. Woo! Yeah. Wine from a box, right? Nothing very sexy about that, you know. it was wine from a box. And we tried that, and, you know, I remember from early on when I was going to school that I used to put these bottles right in my knapsack and I'd like run out the door and then I'm like, oh, my parents are going to hear this, so I used to take the box out and just grab the bag, right? And I just throw the bag in my knapsack. That'd be my drink for the day anyway. I don't know why I'm thinking about that. So I knew. My first time I drank, nothing crazy happened, right? No clothes came off. Didn't get arrested, but nothing really happened. But I said, this is interesting, right? This is kind of cool. I see some of my older friends, they're doing it. I'm going to give it a go again. And I gave it a go again that weekend. And something happened. Something miraculous actually happened. I found the thing that gave me wholesome and stillness. And you're probably like, what are you talking about? See, for me, alcohol is actually the elixir to life. And it's the thing that makes me feel okay inside. And so when the first time I put booze in me, I said, okay, I'm feeling pretty good. Let me have another one, right? And drink another one. I felt even better. And all of a sudden, all these things and the stuff that was going on in my head and, you know, It was out the window. And I could kind of just be myself. See, for someone else, that's not the way it works. You know? You are who you are, right? And then, you know, something like my wife, right? She takes a drink and she's like, I'm starting to feel it. I'm like, yeah, that's the point, right? I mean, what else are you drinking, you know? And I was going overseas to do a talk, and some lady, she ordered a drink. She ordered, you know, she said, I'll have an orange juice, and I'll have two, you know, little bottles of vodka, which is just crazy, right? I mean, what's that going to do, you know? And she's on the airplane, and, you know, she grabs that, and she does something pretty amazing. Right? I've never really seen this, right? She takes the booze, she pours it in a cup, she mixes it with orange juice, and she doesn't really drink it, right? She's like reading her magazine, right? Stirring a little. And then she does something crazy. She gets up out of her seat, and she goes to the bathroom. And I'm just like, are you going to drink this already, or what? Right? Like, and I'm like, that's a $27 order, you know? Like, you better drink it, you know? I mean, and, you know, for most normal people, they don't think like that, you know? They're just, you know, reading their magazine and get on with life, and, you know, they'll have a drink. So from early on, I kind of knew that this stuff was working for me. And so I went on. I played sports, and I was playing basketball. And towards the end of high school, basketball was just—it was not really—it was not fun anymore. You know, I'd rather go drink with the guys and, you know, go smoke pot in the park. I went to this school in the city, and it's this very very eclectic mix of people in the city, and. You know, they would always know because, you know, they're like, oh, here's this white kid. We're going to sell him drugs. And so, you know, from early on, I got involved with drugs. I mean, that's just my story. I mean, I wasn't even, you know, I couldn't even go buy booze at the bodega, you know. So, I mean, I'm going to use drugs. And so I continued. My progression happened very fast. When I came into AA, people used, you know, they always like, yeah, I used to, you know, spill more booze than, you know, you ever drank and stuff like that. And, you know, my answer to them was, well, if you would stop spilling your drink, maybe you'd get her faster. You know? Right? Like, I mean, 30, you know, I hear some people, you know, 30, 40 years of drinking, I mean, I would have died, you know. And, you know, my progression happened very fast. I know there's a lot of young people in here. You guys need to listen to this, right? Because you need to know that I don't need to go drink and do drugs for 30 years to qualify as an alcoholic. Right? I don't need to do that, all that stuff. I don't need to go to jail 18 times before I can say, you know what, I might have a problem. Did that stuff happen? Yeah, it did. But that's not what qualifies me to be standing up here tonight. And I'm going to go into that a little bit, about what that looks like. And so I started getting drugs, and then so I barely made it, barely graduated high school, and I said, I know what the problem is. It's New York. Right? And some of you have been there. I mean, yeah, that's clearly the problem. There's too many people, right? I mean, I'm on this subway. It's a hot, you know, it's 90 degrees outside. People are just, you know, they're angry, right? Everyone's angry, right? Everyone's just, you know, pushing me in the streets. Like what's going on here? It's not as friendly as you guys are down here. And I'm saying, that's it. I know what it is. It's New York. That's definitely the problem. And so I said, I got to get out of here. Got to get out of here. Where do I go? And so I start thinking for a second. And in true drug addict nature and form, I decided to go the only logical place I could think of. And I bought a one-way ticket to Amsterdam. Yeah. Makes sense to me. And so off I went on this new adventure. Really, already by that time, by the time I was like already a senior in high school, I kind of knew that there was a problem. I was drinking a lot more than my buddies that were on the basketball team. Everyone was like, okay, it's time to go home. I'm still going. I'm like, but it's only 1:30. What's wrong with you guys? You know? And so I said, I'm going to go and try to, you know, start a new life. And maybe, you know, stop doing some of the stuff that I've been doing. It wasn't only maybe 3 hours I was off the plane, right? And I'm already, you know, back to the same old deal, you know? And I learned something. I learned that you need money, right, to kind of go and do what you want to do, right? So I didn't know what to do. I didn't know what to do, except for what the only thing which I knew how to do was to go deal drugs, right? I mean, that was the only thing I knew. And so I started doing that over there. And apparently, I wasn't the only person who was also dealing drugs in Amsterdam. Imagine that, right? There's some other people that were doing that as well. I didn't think about that. And every day, I'm just trying to get by. I'm just selling, you know, enough. I'm trying to get enough money so that I can be okay, right? Like, I'm not going out and, like, having a great time and all this stuff, but, like, I'm calling all my parents, like, yeah. I'm seeing all these museums, you know, these nice, like, art museums. Oh, yeah, which one? I don't know. You know the guy Heineken? You know, he's got a museum. That was the Heineken factory. I didn't go to any museums, okay? But I'm telling everybody that I did, right? And that I'm having this, you know, tremendous Europe, you know, travel extravaganza, which clearly was not the case. But at that time, I every day I needed drugs, I needed booze to feel okay. And I kept, you know, taking pills, and I kept drinking every single morning, and it got really bad. It got really dark, really fast. And towards the end of that, out of that 6 months, I something happened, and I pretty much was I got kidnapped by some Russian drug dealers. And they beat me up pretty bad. Like my ears were over here, my eyes were like over here. It was a very, very dark time. And these guys were serious. They had guns, and they wanted a lot of money from me because apparently I was good at what I was doing. Right? I'm a good drug dealer, and apparently they didn't like that. So, can you believe it? So they wanted money, and they actually I got thrown into like a hole, and I was there for about 4 or 5 days, and these guys were serious, right? But at the same time, my alcoholism, my drug addiction was so intense that if they were going to kill me, right, my head said, well, then let's get this over with, right? Because I can't keep on going the life that I'm living right now. I don't want to go. I can't do it anymore. But if you're not going to kill me, I'm telling you right now, I need some alcohol or booze. And I'm telling this to the guys. You need to give me some pills. You need to give me something. That's where my mind was. Because again, I wasn't going out and having a good time and going out to parties and like, no, I'm in a hole, right? I'm beat up and they want money for me. I still need the booze, okay? Because that's the only thing that's going to make me just feel okay for a little bit. So I did what anyone else would do. I made a phone call. Who'd I call? Yeah, called up Mom. I said, Mom, you're never going to believe it. She said, can't help you this time. You got yourself into this one. I can't help you. So I did what anyone else would do. I called Dad. And, man, thank you, just, you know, the parents. Really, thank you. Because I wouldn't be here tonight if it wasn't for my parents. And my dad said, you know what, let me see what I can do. And I got to reshuffle a couple things, and I had to get a lot of money, big money. And I had to give these guys money. And we finally got that money, we Western Union over, and I came straight back to the States. I went into my first treatment center out in Long Island, New York. And still didn't think anything was wrong. And I was there for 6 months, and I kind of did the, you know, the let me go to the gym, you know, and work on that. And let me see if I could find a girlfriend, you know, in rehab and all that stuff. Doesn't work. And anyway, so 6 months in that deal, left. Next day, got loaded. Right? That continued on. After 4 or 5 treatment centers, I was homeless. I was 20 years old. I was living on a park bench in Brooklyn, New York. My body shut down. There was some stuff that wasn't working, and I was gonna die. I mean, it was the dead of winter, you know. And I was gonna die. And I remembered. I remembered AA for some reason. And because there was this AA clubhouse that was like right down the street. And I said to myself, you know what I could do? I can go in there. I could talk to somebody. Maybe grab $20. Maybe get a pack of smokes. Maybe a cup of coffee. And then I'll be on my way. Right? That was my intent for going to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. To see what I can get from somebody. And I'll tell you, I don't know what was going on, but I raised my hand. I said, I'm Jared. I'm going to die. I don't know what to do anymore. I need help. Right? And there was this guy, and this is funny. There was this guy. He was wearing a cowboy's hat, living in New York, and he called me Bubba. And he said, hey, Bubba, I need some help. Where's Bubba? I don't know where he was talking about Bubba. He's like, hey, Bubba, I need some help. And I'm like, I don't think you heard what I just said, right? I said that I'm ready to go off myself, and you're telling me that you need help with some ashtrays? No, I don't think so. I don't think that's in the cards tonight. And he said, well, you know, like, I'll go buy you, you know, dinner if you want, and, you know, I'll give you a pack of smokes. I said, deal, I'm in, right? It was that, you know, I got bribed into Alcoholics Anonymous. So I cleaned the ashtrays. It was when we were smoking, you know, back then. So I was cleaning the ashtrays. You can't smoke in New York City. I was cleaning the ashtrays, and then he said, well, you know, just stick around. It was a marathon meeting. So I went to the next meeting, cleaned the ashtrays again. And I did that all the way up to like midnight. And I'll tell you what happened. Nothing miraculous happened. But there was a shift, right? A 1 degree shift in my overall perspective and being. Because I came to that same meeting the next day, and all of a sudden, those weren't your ashtrays, they were my ashtrays. Right? All of a sudden, it wasn't your meeting, it was my meeting. Someone gave me a job. Someone gave me something to finally do. And that's why I love this place, right? Because everyone's got a job, right? You might not like your job, right? But you got a job, right? And Jonathan, I know he's like a karate, you know, kid guy. And, you know, I always think about that, right? Because when Mr. Miyagi was telling the karate kid, hey, man, just keep painting the house. Just keep painting. And he's saying, why am I painting the house? Why am I doing the dishes? Why am I doing the laundry? Why am I cleaning up after you people? Well, because it was all in preparation for the big game. Right? It was all in preparation for the big fight. You didn't know it at that time, but it was in preparation. And so those ashtrays were in preparation for me to stay sober. I didn't know it at that time, but it was. And so I can start doing stuff in AA. And guess what? Life got great. Life got amazingly better. Real fast. And I start hanging out with all these young people. My first home group was never had a legal drink. Right? How fitting. Right? Because I never had a legal drink. And you go into that meeting on a Thursday night down in New York City, and there's about 250 screaming lunatic young alcoholics. You know? And I love it. Right? Because I feel the energy. I feel God. I feel all these things that I don't feel everywhere. You know? And I see these kids, and they're like full of life, and they're doing stuff, and they're going to conferences, and they're going to, you know, road trips, and they're getting jobs, and, you know, they're having relationships, like all these cool things, right? And I remember that. I miss that. My buddy would call me up on a Friday. He would say, "Hey, what are you doing today?" I'm like, "I'm not doing anything, you know? You want to go to a conference? It's in Nebraska. Sure, I'll be at your house in 20 minutes, you know? Like, I had nothing on my agenda, you know? AA was my agenda at that time. So I ran around, and I went to a bunch of conferences, and I was hanging out with people, mean people around the country. It was really, really cool. And life got really good. And I started praying for the Holy Trinity. You guys know what the Holy Trinity is? The job, the car, and the girl. Right? If I only get the right job, if I only get to drive the nice car, and I get that girl, life is going to be okay. And guess what? God gives us those things, right? God takes care of His kids. So I got those great things. And those exact things were the things that almost took me out of Alcoholics Anonymous. You guys hear what I said? Okay. Because all of a sudden, that job wasn't good enough. And all of a sudden, the car that I'm driving is not good enough. And that partner that I'm with, she's not good enough. And I'm looking at all these external things in my external situation, and I'm not in the penthouse up in Gramercy Park, and I'm not driving that nice Lexus, and the girl, if she would just leave me alone for 30 seconds. So I started doing things that I was very out of character for me. And I was in Los Angeles, I was working over there, and I was 8 years sober, and I was in a hotel room, and the same thoughts that I had when I was in that hole, I was having those same thoughts. But this time, they were louder. And there was no drugs or alcohol to mute those noises that I had. You would ask me when was the last time I went to a meeting? I don't know. Alcoholics Anonymous doesn't work. I'm doing everything you guys are telling me. I'm going to a meeting every day. I'm not drinking. I'm a winner. I didn't feel like a winner. See, because you could fool somebody at 7 o'clock at the coffee pot when they ask you, "How's your day going?" "Oh, it's going great. Life's great." But you can't fool anybody at 3 a.m. when you're having another sleepless night. Right? So I decided to not kill myself again in that hotel room. And that this time I'm really going to do this deal. And I went to some meeting in LA, and some guy, he gave me a tape. On that tape was a gentleman named Mark Houston. And I popped that in my rental car, and I was blown away by what I was hearing. And I'm saying, I gotta find this guy. Okay? I don't know who this guy is, but I never heard anything like this, and I gotta find this guy. And so I call up the place, and they're like, Mark's been dead for a couple of years, you know? He's not here anymore. And I got in touch with some other people that are part of his lineage. And I call up my current sponsor, Chris. And I told him exactly what was going on. He goes, oh, yeah, I know exactly what's going on. He's like, when you come back to New York? I go, tomorrow. He's like, great, come to my house. And I pulled up to this gentleman's house, and he knew exactly what was going on. I was dying. I was dying from untreated alcoholism. Because I never really did this work. I went to a lot of meetings, hung out with a lot of girls, made a lot of coffee, and smoked a lot of cigarettes. Right? And I thought that I was literally, you know, in this program. But I was so far from it. So he grabbed this book and we started talking about what this program actually is about. And without going into it too much, because we're short on time, he talked about the circle and the triangle. And that's what I'm going to talk about tonight. Why is that so important? The circle and triangle is not in the beginning of the book, because we don't, you know, but we draw it in there, right? It stands for unity, right? What we're doing tonight, the fellowship. How cool is this? That we could come here, hang out on a Saturday night, talk about recovery, eat some barbecue, and have a good time. They talk about the program, 12 steps, actual application, doing really what it says in the book. Like, and he told me the secret sauce, and I'll tell you guys the secret sauce. You guys ready? The secret sauce for AA is when they ask us to do something in the book, we actually do it. My mind was blown that day, right? I mean, like, you mean we're really going to do this, you know? He goes, yeah. And we did it. And I mean, I was just hungry because I knew I needed something. We did inventory. I had to really take a look at myself at who I am. That whole process of inventory is about ego deflation. Realizing that today, my main job is to be the last part of that legacy, that triangle, which is to be of service. And I work with guys, I work with gals all the time around the country. And they say, hey, Jared, I can never do that. I don't want to tell you really what's going on. I'm afraid. I say, I understand. I've been there. But there is a way out. And that's being as open and honest with yourself, your sponsor, and the people and family around you. Really telling them who you really are. That makes the difference between people who stay in this deal and are living this deal and the people who are just on the outskirts. That's the secret sauce to this. I had some amazing recent spiritual experiences I want to talk about. Because of Mark Houston, I started doing something called Steel on Steel. Some of y'all have heard about it. And we jump on a conference call every week. We rotate, me and a bunch of guys. And we talk about what's going on. It's kind of like an accountability deal, right? Where, you know, we ask each other, you know, how are we living this spiritual life? How are we really encompassing all these principles in our life? How many days did I pray? How many days did I meditate? Did I do any inventory this week? Do I owe amends? One night, one of the guys that I was working with for a while was talking about his adoption. And he was talking about that he never really got an opportunity to go find his biological parents. And we both brought it into prayer and meditation that evening. See, the funny thing is that I'm adopted as well. And I never also really gave much thought about this because I was just so consumed with myself my entire life. And I brought it to meditation that evening, and I get a phone call the next day. It's from my brother, okay? And he said, hey, Jared, I found something about you on the internet. And I'm saying, oh, my God. What did I not remember I did now? He goes, no, it's nothing bad. And he said, hey, Jared, I was on an adoption registry website, and I found your name. He goes, there's an email address. Do you want that information? I said, absolutely. Send that over. So I send off that email, and I'm going to Philadelphia that weekend to go do a workshop. And right before I'm about to go talk for the workshop, I get a phone call. And I go, hello? And it was a gentleman's voice. And he said, hey, is this Jared? I said, yes, it is. He said, hey, my name is Rich, and I'm your father. He said, I've been looking for you for over 30 years. I said, well, that's interesting. Okay. Well, I'd like to meet you. Where do you live, Rich? He goes, well, I live in Philadelphia. Right? You know where this is going. And I'm like, okay, well, that's interesting. I'm currently in Philadelphia right now. I said, where are you right now? He said, well, I'm on the corner of South 3rd Street. I'm in a diner. I'm having a cup of coffee with my son. I say, okay. And I take a look at where I'm at. And I'm on the corner of South 2nd Street, right? And I can see the diner. And so I walk into that diner. I know exactly who he is because he looks like me, just a little taller, right? And the first thing I say to this guy is, hey, Rich, I got to tell you something. I am so grateful you got a full set of hair. And we got a chat, and he said, you got a stepsister, and you got a brother also. And told me I was Sicilian, right? Never knew that. Makes sense, because I love pasta. And this happened just a few months ago. And I find out that this 16-year-old kid, my brother, is going through the same exact thing that I was going through at 16. Can't stop drinking. Can't stop doing drugs. So here I am in this situation thinking, oh my God, it's all about me. Oh my God, I'm the victim here. Oh my God, you know, blah, blah, blah. And God brings me to go meet this gentleman so I can have a relationship with this kid and help this kid out get in recovery. And I do what I did what I always know how to do, right? I start talking about how great this amazing program is. I start talking about recovery and the amazing things that my life has. So hopefully I could save him from a life of torture and chaos. And I start bringing him to meetings, and he's still sober. That's what this deal is all about. That's what this is all about. It's all about being where I can be of unique service to other individuals. Marcia says, come on up here. Not even a question. Absolutely. Right? We do this for fun. We do this for free. That's how cool this is. The only thing is that this would have never happened, though, if I wasn't doing steps 10 and 11 and steal and steal. So we could think that at times, like, this is hocus pocus, right? Why am I doing this? God, whatever. But it's real. Now, this type of stuff happens every single day, right? It happens to you guys as well. Right? The only difference is that there's times where we can see it. Some people call it coincidences. I call it God moments. We see God. He's bright, and his kids are bright. And then there's other days where it's just gray. And it's cloudy. And I can't see anything. I continue doing this because I want to have more experiences. Right? I go through the work again. I work with more people so I could have these new, cooler experiences all the time. That's why I'm in this deal. That's why I continue doing this. Because I don't know what's going to happen down the road. All I do know is that when I took a look at my 2-year-old son on Friday before I left, I said, how did I get here? I'm going to give this up? For what? For this amazing life? I would never. And just like I made a promise to my dad that day, saying, he said, you just keep doing whatever you need to do and keep going to those AA meetings, right? AA meetings, right? And I made him a promise. I said, I'm going to try to stay sober for the rest of my life. And I was serious, you know? So thank you to the family members. Thank you to the residents. Thank you to all you guys for being here tonight. It made my night, that's for sure. So thank you.